Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 69. This is our 2019 Masters Tip Show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour preview at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have European Tour expert Paul Williams and resident podcast pundit Barry O'Hanrahan. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon, guys. Hello, listeners.
Not often we get together in the afternoon. So in that last few times we have been, haven't we? Although you're in Dubai, Barry, so it was your evening. But anyway, we won't go down that route.
Yeah, but the clocks have changed now and it's bright until half eight and Masters is coming and the whole world is great.
It is great. The best, joint best week of the year. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk is our website. Naturally, we're available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. Link is available in the description box. There is going to be so much chatter in there this week, and there already has been. You can follow us on Twitter, at Bamford Golf, that's me. Paul is at Golf Betting, and Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I've already recorded that for the Masters. That's out there in the ether. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, Audio Boom, and a myriad of different pod channels. You can also listen via our Golf Betting System YouTube channel. Naturally, subscribe. Please subscribe, new listeners, and follow the podcast. Please take time to review to rate and review us on iTunes, and naturally, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. Now, we said last week, if you leave us a review, I will read them out for this busy Masters pod, and we have two. First one, outstanding golf pod, exclamation mark, 5 stars. My starting point for handicapping golf tournaments for one and done and DFS selections. The guys provide a comprehensive review of the course and the tournament and then dive into KPIs that hopefully lead you in the same directions. Overall, the guys provide quality information all golf bettors can use to their advantage. That is from Addy Mien in the United States of America. So thank you for that one.
Very nice. Thank you.
Love it.
Secondly, this is from Steve-O, the golf guy. Now, he's interesting because Steve-O's in Dublin, Barry. So he could be one of your neighbours. But I will read this and we'll have a little chuckle. Absolutely superb, exclamation mark, five stars. I've been listening to Steve Paul and the Jet Setter Barry for well over a year. And boys, you are an integral part of my week. The level of detail and deep analysis on both tours, along with a general knowledge of players, courses, grass and all formats of golf, over the last decade is without doubt second to none. I have, of course, profited greatly from taking large pockets of information from all of you, historical data, and punted away happily. I do personally wish there was a little time at the end of each podcast for some first round leader suggestions, as I believe that that's a market in big events that gets the excitement going for first day. But overall, this podcast is first class. If there was a podcast awards, you guys would be up for the Golden Globe. Keep up the good work, gents. If you are ever there, you go, Barry. If you are ever over in Dublin, I'll happily shout you a few beers. Also, well, just on a side note, I can't be the only one that thinks Steve sounds incredibly like Boise from Only Fools and Horses. Enjoy the Masters, Steve-O from Dublin. Yeah.
So you're a cross between Boyce and Michael Caine, the other week.
From the States the other day.
Ooh, nice. I mean, look, if there were awards for reviews, that is banging up there and getting the statuette. That's awesome. Thank you very much.
Now, there is a golf guy on Twitter, so I reckon that might be the same gentleman, Barry. So you might be able to get together for a couple of beverages in Dublin one evening and talk golf.
You never know, yeah. That'd be good. Yeah, exactly. I'd be well up for that.
You never know. We might actually get over to an Irish Open at some point in our lives, Steve. Well,
if they ever have it in a location that's within 38 hours of Dublin, we might, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you can get down the west very quickly. We should go to La Hinch. We'll work on La Hinch. I'll try sway you guys on it.
Cool. Right. Thank you for those two reviews. They were absolutely fantastic. Now, we asked for questions in the last podcast, just for new listeners. Podcast 68, we recorded that middle of last week. That was our pre-picks preview. There's also a Masters preview that goes back to episode 60, where we go into a hell of a lot of detail around the courses and around trends and things that might uncover the winner this week. So episode 60, episode 68, if you want some more podcast content from the Golf Betting System lads. But we've got a few questions here that we have been provided on Twitter or our Facebook group. So I'm going to go through them. The first one is from Mike Merzingis on Twitter. And this one's for Barry. If you were picking on DraftKings, Barry, for the Masters, who would you choose between Brooks Koepka and Jason Day?
So this is kind of a got me excited again, because I wasn't able to do DraftKings over in the UAE. I just kind of steered back from it, and golf betting as well, because I wasn't able to watch an awful lot of it. So now I've got a few, my betting kind of done, and some fantasy teams are starting to form in my head. I am dead set on DraftKings this week. If I was going to pick between Koepka and Day, personally for my teams, I wouldn't pick either. They're both a bit flaky at the moment. Koepka having lost 25 pounds, and Jason Day with his back that seems to be made of matchsticks. I don't know. It's a tough look. If price being no object, I would pick Koepka over Day. Brooks's record in Augusta is it's quite a nice line he's got going. What is it I saw there?
Yeah, it's progressive, isn't it? 33-21-11, I think he's done. So.
That's it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the 21-11 one is a nice a nice look, you know. He did miss last year due to injury, I think it was. But his last three tournaments have been a bit ropey. So whether he's just kind of priming himself and trying to just get ready for, you know, to unleash his game in Augusta, can he time it? Who knows? Jason Day, the guy, I just know, he drives people, from a punting and fantasy perspective, he drives me nuts, because one week you think, all right, here we go, he's on, he's, you know, he's had a good run in, here we go, and bang, he withdraws after four holes. Yeah. So there's no doubt, if he is fit, he is as gritty as they come, and he really knows how to battle it out. Price, yeah, there's $400 between them in the price tag. I think it's 9.5 versus 9.1. If you can squeeze Brooks Koepka, he'd be my pick between the two.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because a lot of people, and I'd class myself in the same bracket, would be put off by sticking Jason Day in any DraftKings team, because, as you said, he withdraws, he absolutely torpedoes your team, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But then does he end up being lightly owned as a result of that? With people swaying away from him,
he's a pivot, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And then has a good week. You know, he potentially wins it or top fives, and it could be the difference between you banking a big haul of dollars or not. But yeah, I'm with you, Barry. I think if I was going to be picking between the two, I think I'd be going Koepka. Neither in particularly great form, are they? So it's.
No, I'd be more inclined to look a little bit below Jason Day there. I mean, Jordan Spieth showed enough good signs last week, barring that crazy nine holes he had, to make him at least worth consideration this week. And maybe that crazy nine holes might prevent him being super high owned.
Yeah.
But then again, it is Spieth and Augusta, so you just don't know.
No, you don't. No.
I mean,
you could have a lot of just new players. Oh, Jordan Spieth's good at Augusta. I'll have him in the team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, even dropping down another few hundred, you've got Molinari and Xander there as well, who are quite attractive at that kind of mid-eights price range. So, listen, let's not do the entire DraftKings thing. We'll move on to the next question. I hope we gave Mike the answer he needs.
Brilliant. Thank you, Barry. Right, this is from Hans Gievers. And this was on the Golf Betting System Facebook group. If you do want to join the group, there is a link in the description box of the podcast. We're coming up to 5,000 members, getting very close. Right, this is for Paul. Any DraftKings value, lower price players with chance to top 20?
Yeah, I think there is. We've got the we're going to do a dedicated DraftKings show, so perhaps we'll go into all of this a little bit in more depth when we cover that on the DK show. But yeah, I mean, the one who caught my eye at $7,000 is Charles Howell III.
Yeah. all over.
Simply because of his consistency. I mean, he obviously won the RSM, didn't he? And a lot of people refused to back him, and again, me included, because you know the amount of times the guy gets into position and finishes T8, T9, T12, somewhere that just doesn't pay you out. But from a DraftKings perspective, it's a different game. I mean, he's had what, 8 top 35 finishes in his last. And his last 8 starts, 5 of them top 15. And if you're looking for a player who's going to be relatively cheap, $7,000, who could potentially finish in the top 15, I think he was, what was he, 18th or something last time he finished here. And again, I think he's got 2 or 3 decent efforts here over the years. He hasn't played for quite some time, but he's that kind of player who can plod along, finish in that kind of 10th, 12th, 15th position and actually get you a decent haul of points.
He's also an Augusta resident or local, isn't he? He's got houses in Augusta and also in Florida. But yeah, he must know the course very, very well. Do you any value in a first round leader bet, you reckon, with Howe?
Potentially, yeah. I'll be pulling together my alternatives and first round leader content. It'll either be late tomorrow. I had a look at it. Actually, it went out early on Wednesday last year, which is probably due to the fact that the tea times didn't come out until horrifically late over here on the Tuesday night. So it may well be early on Wednesday morning. But yeah, Howe the Third, he's the kind of player who often does pop up first round leader. Charlie Hoffman's been backed off the boards, as you'd expect, first round leader.
Yeah.
And every man has dogs on him, so I think he's like,
and he'll come fifth or sixth. Yeah. You know he's not going to lead.
Well, he's quite capable of doing it. That's the thing. I mean, he's 100-1 outright, and I've seen him as short as 33-1 to be first round leader. So
surely Jordan nope. Speed's got to be worth a first round leader punt, because you just know he starts quick.
Yeah, he's got an incredible record, hasn't he, in terms of
22
in terms of first round leader. Yeah, and we touched on it in one of the other pods we did last week or the week before. You'll know very quickly with Jordan whether he's going to contend or not, because if he gets out of the blocks quickly, then he's in all likelihood he's going to be there for the duration. If he starts poorly this week, then you probably won't see him for the rest of the week. So another name.
Speaking of Charlie Hoffman.
Go on.
Sorry, yeah, just lost you there for a sec. But like, just speaking of Hoffman, he's great value in DraftKings, 6,800.
Yeah. There's some crackers. I mean, Kevin Kisner. I mean, a lot of these prices came out before. You know, they've been up for a couple of weeks because of the millionaire maker that's out there. So Kisner's 6,700, and clearly, you know, after winning the WGC, the match play, he would have been priced far, far higher than that had that have happened after the pricing had come out. But he's like 70-1 outright, but 6,700, which would kind of put him in the 150-1 kind of bracket if you were doing a correlation between odds and on DK prices. So, but yeah, there's a few.
We know that Wynn's in play this week at Masters, and Charlie Hoffman on our predictor model sits fifth in the field over the last 5 years for performances in windy conditions.
Yeah, he's good in the wind, yeah.
Charles Howe, 8th.
Yeah, he's good in the wind. He likes a classical track, doesn't he, Charlie? Mm. And you can see there's a really good fit. I mean, as to whether you'd back him outright to see him, you know, potentially come top 10, and, you know, we can talk about the each-way places in a second that are available because there are a lot. You know, it's not out of the realms of possibility, but he's more likely to pop up first-round leader, and he's probably more likely to be better value play for DraftKings, I thought. But you know, he's in decent nick. Strange things have happened.
Question from Jim Rogers on the Golf Betting System Facebook group. I'll throw this to all of us. What's your favourite Masters moment? For me, still nothing to surpass Sandy Lyle's shot from the fairway bunker on 18 on his way to victory. Barry.
Oh, God. I was a little bit young for that to be a memory, I'm glad to say.
I can remember it, but yes. I'm a bit older.
God, that's a brutal. Do you know, actually, the one I actually really enjoyed it only a couple of years ago where it was Arnie, Jack, and Gary Player all teed off.
That's right.
Together.
That was a
good one. I know it's not an in-tournament moment, but it's part of Masters. And, you know, I think there's a little bit more to the Masters than just the actual tournament itself. There's a
Wasn't there one where
it's an event? I guess.
Where Jack also made a hole in one in the par three comp a couple of years ago.
I think that was the same year, wasn't it? Yeah. That was a really nice moment. I mean, look, I don't know where do you start. Probably the one that sticks out the most for me is Tiger's chip in on 16.
Yep.
It's just so iconic, and one that's just. I was, you know, young enough for it to be a big influence and just very memorable. And I guess thankfully, because it's been such a great moment, it's stuck around for all these years. I think forever it'll be synonymous with Augusta for me.
Yeah. When I did the, we published the initial preview that you wrote, Steve, for Augusta a few weeks back. And I put a video in, and my knee-jerk reaction was to put that video in. That for me is what epitomizes the Masters. I guess it's kind of a generational thing, as you know, Jim clearly remembers the Sandy Lyle moment far clearer. I've seen it back, you know, an incredible shot in the context of that particular event. And for me, from a betting perspective, Patrick Reed last year winning was the best result I've had. So that was quite nice, but that's clearly not the.
Patrick Reed.
it's clearly not the biggest moment. I tell you what, I was on Angel Cabrera back in 2013, and the shot he played into the 18th when he needed birdie.
Yeah,
that was an incredible shot. And had he gone on to win that, that would have been, you know, an incredibly pivotal shot in the context of that tournament. But sadly, that wasn't going to happen because Adam Scott found his putting boots, didn't he, Scotty?
I was on Angel Cabrera too, watching that in a bar in Manhattan, and happened to be beside two Aussie guys. Myself and my friend were there. Mm. And so I doubled down and backed Cabrera against Scott against the Aussies. And so that really stung twice.
Yeah, not good. And Bubba's banana shot when he won the which one was that? 2012, wasn't it? When he beat
2012.
When he beat,
that's the one I was going to say.
Yeah,
you pinched that from me.
Sorry, Steve.
2012. That was unbelievable shot. That I think that was my favourite moment. The other moment I really remember, although you can't classify it, Jim, as a favourite moment, was the collapse of Jordan Spieth in 2016 on the par three.
That was
just madness. He was cantering, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, painful viewing from a neutral perspective. You know, fascinating viewing. If you'd backed him, which I hadn't, you'd have been absolutely distraught, wouldn't you?
Was he 9-1 or something that year? And like half the world and his wife were on him.
Yeah,
he was leading by, was it 5 or 6? Just cantering.
I think it was 5. Yeah, it was 5 ahead at the turn, wasn't he? Something like that. And
then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, he's hit it in the water. And you think, well, that's bad. And then he does it again. Wow.
Just while we're on that, the hat tip to the, if anyone hasn't listened to it, the No Laying Up podcast, they did an interview with Spieth there recently and an absolutely brilliant listen, really fascinating. And Spieth goes into it pretty deep into that week and the collapse itself. So really great listen. The Elkington one they did recently was highly entertaining.
Yeah, that is a good podcast to listen to. Right, Barry, this is from Richard Walsh on Twitter. Is Barry going to be on Woodland because he actually thinks Gary can win? Or is he just an auto bet out of fear at this stage? I do agree with him that it's a year to have 2 or 3 picks at shortish odds rather than 6 or 7 picks. From Richard. What do you think?
Yeah,
well, is it pure fear now? Or are you just a genuine truther, or do you think he can actually win?
I mean, at this, let's verbalise what I answered to Richard on Twitter. Try to get some emotion behind it. I've backed Woodland for all those reasons and probably a whole lot more. It could be to save myself from emotional trauma if he does go on and do well. It's also because I think he has a game that should do quite well at Augusta. You know, he's got all the skills, length, you know, reasonable all round game, and has shown that he can get himself up there. It's whether he can get over the line or not. So that's It is. It's probably an emotionally protective bet that I've put on, if I'm being completely realistic. Though he does get quite close on the stats that we were talking about on the last show. He nearly makes it into all the categories that we've identified are important, or we think are important for performing at Augusta. So there's a little column A, a little column B, and then most of the rest of the alphabet are the reasons why I've backed Cary Woodland. I don't know. I like his style as well. So there's a, yeah. I can't really say much more about it than that. If he wins, amazing. I would be surprised if he wins. That's why I have taken him 10 places with one of the bookmakers.
Yep.
Neil Fay on Twitter, next question. This is for Paul. Xander Schauffele seems to prime himself for the majors. First appearance at Augusta last year and he made the cut. Do you think he has the game to be involved this year?
Yes.
Good answer.
I'll go into more detail when we get to that point, but Xander's one of the players that I've backed. I do think he's got a very strong chance this year. So yes, we'll go into that a little bit later on.
Ken Banks on the Facebook group. This is just a yes or no. Is it unrealistic to think Freddie Boom Boom Couples is a decent first round leader bet at a boosted 275-1 on a course he thrives?
No. Phrasing that question has me confused. I mean, am I supposed to say yay or nay if I think he...
Well, I'm saying no.
Is he good value?
It's not unrealistic. So that's a positive answer.
Yeah,
I was looking the other day at one of these windy Masters, and right up until the third round, Bernard Langer was in the top four.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when the conditions go very tricky and it isn't a straightforward test, course knowledge and a little bit of patience come into play, old-timers can get in the mix for, you know, for parts of the tournament. So I think couples could get involved, yeah.
Well, knowing Ken Banks and the volume of free bets he seems to get through the Facebook group, it would be foolish not to launch one of them at 275-1 if you can get it that way.
Mm. That's a very good shout, Barry. That's a very good shout.
It's a super free roll.
I think if couples is going to appear at any point on the leaderboard this week, it will be on Thursday. And he has done that a number of times in the past. And actually, he's not been playing that badly on the seniors, has he? The worry with couples always is, you know, is he going to be fit enough? Is his back going to hold out? But he's been churning out top 20s on the seniors over the last few weeks. So he must be in reasonable enough health to suggest that if he gets a decent start, he might be all right. Who knows?
This is from Fergal Kelly on the Golf Betting System Facebook group. Do you think it's still possible for a shorter hitter to win around Augusta, a la Francesco Molinari?
Is he that short anymore?
He's a different gravy now as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's probably just got to long enough status in my mind.
What's the stat you've got to stay to? You've got to be averaging 288 or above. He's going to be in that bracket,
288. His Wikipedia profile isn't going to help me. Right. I'm getting onto the PGA Tour preview. But the hardest choice I had this today was my kind of midpoint player. And logically, I've been wanting to put Kucherov in for a long time. But realistically, he just hasn't got the mumbo to win it, in my opinion. You know, ever since 2007, which was a long time ago, don't forget they've also added another 40 yards to the course this year.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel that a shorter hitter can win. Molinari is 290, so 128. So I would suggest that's just about scraping being competitive. He has added some distance.
Yeah. I think
he's beefed it up. Yeah,
I'm not sure there's a definitive answer to his question there, because I think in a renewal where it's dry potentially dry and windy, and it puts more emphasis on players with some precision and ball strikers than I'd have thought a shorter hitter in those kind of conditions would be able to flourish. In a softer renewal, it's a long track anyway, isn't it? And we know by the way it's set up, It plays even longer than than it actually is. In a long softer renewal, I think the shorter hitters will struggle to score on the true scoring holes, which is often where the pivotal scoring actually comes in for the event. So the par fives on the back nine, the 13th and the 15th. And if you haven't got the power to really be attacking those two and giving yourself a very strong birdie chance, if not an outside eagle chance, pretty much every time you tee it up and you play those two holes, then I think you're losing ground to the rest of the field, personally.
Danny Willett, when he won this in 16, when it was windy, but don't forget, it was also cold. It was kind of 15, 16 degrees. It was very un-USA-like, and the ball wasn't travelling. He won at 292, but I think a lot of the field couldn't get close to some of the holes because it was just so cold and windy.
Yeah.
And it became a real grind fest. He won at 5 under. Don't forget, Spieth was cantering along at sort of double 9, 10 under, and then he just collapsed. I don't see it with the weather forecast being at that level of scoring. The weather isn't great, but the weather is warm. So it's windy, but it's warm. So I think the ball will travel. In my mind, Garcia won at 9 under, Reed won at 15 under last year. I think it's going to be somewhere in between. I reckon 11 to 13 under wins it. Because I think the temperature, I mean, it's 28 degrees across two of the 4 days, and the other 2 days are 25 degrees. So it's the ball will travel.
Yeah.
Even though there's going to be wind. And some of the wind, as you pointed out to me this morning, Paul, if we're going to have southwesterly wind, that's actually going to be helping on 13 and 15. So, yeah. For me, I still think about 13 under wins this year. But I agree with you. On a course that's likely to be very soft on Thursday and Friday, it's been raining. It rained on Friday. It rained on Sunday yesterday. It's going to rain today if it isn't already. That course, and it's also due to rain tomorrow. That course is going to be soft Thursday and Friday. Even though they've got probably the strongest sub-air machines in the world under the greens, those greens will be receptive. It's going to be about 10 to 15 miles an hour of the wind on Thursday, which isn't too bad. It'll just take the edge off the scoring, but nothing crazy. It picks up to about gusting 20 on the Friday. Sunday, well, that could be anything. There's thunder in the... There's a front passing through. There's 65% of thunder chance and winds gusting up to 30 miles an hour.
And that was a day that... Yeah, that was a day that was coming from the southwest. And I think when we looked at it, that the 13th and the 15th with the southwesterly will play... the second shot from the 13th will play into the wind, and the whole of the 15th will play into the wind. So players are going to struggle to get home in two, even though both of those holes are relatively short.
Oh, okay, I misunderstood. So they're actually into the wind.
Yeah, as I read it, yeah.
It's worthy of note.
So, worthy of note. But then, it's swapping around, and there's different conditions from day to day, isn't there? Sunday is that day where it's coming in from that angle, and it's far stronger than it had been, certainly for the Saturday, which looks pretty benign, doesn't it?
Don't forget, 13's only 5-10 yards as well.
Yeah, hang on. We got to hold back. Hitting an approach shot into a wind that's not too strong is not something that's going to scare these guys, and it will actually help them stop longer approach shots quicker on those greens. Like, I would much prefer to be hitting an approach shot to 15 into the wind than downwind.
Yeah,
because you can go shooting over the back of that green, no problem. Or the ball,
over there, or
the ball can get knocked down. If you're playing 15 downwind, you can get knocked down and end up short. So, I think approach shots. Hitting those 200 yard approach shots, 210 or whatever yard approach shots into a little draft. I think the guys love that.
Yeah, I mean, what it will create, and if it is as strong as those early forecasts suggest, which is kind of 25 to 30 miles an hour, then some of the holes that are going to have crosswinds are going to be particularly tough. The 9th and the 10th, I think, are going to be tricky holes to play if that does all pan out. But, you know, we're sitting here on Monday evening and we're talking about something that's nearly a week away. So it could be completely different by that point. But certainly it does look like that's it's going to be a more challenging day on Sunday. And that'll bring a bit of drama into it, particularly if we've had a proper moving day that was benign and, you know, some scores have been made and then players have got to hang on for dear life on Sunday. That should make for some fascinating viewing.
And should squeeze the leaderboard together as well, absolutely, hopefully.
Yeah. Absolutely. Particularly if the worst of the weather comes towards the back end of the day, then it could be very strong.
Yeah, not great for the nerves if you have bets on those guys up there. certainly make it all the more enjoyable.
If it really does turn to SHIT and you've got thunderstorms delaying play for 4 or 5 hours and the wind's too strong, blah, blah, it might even be a Monday finish. But I don't. I don't want to be doom and gloom, Merchant, because then stops us getting excited about Siwoo Kim next week for the RBC Heritage. We'll be backing him at 16-1 next week, Barry.
Are we all praying that Siwoo Kim shoots 80-84 this week and his price drops out a little bit?
Yeah. Dear. Don't talk about yesterday. Yeah. That was another bad day at the office. Okay. There were lots and lots of questions that you guys provided for us. Thank you very much for every one of them. We will get back. We couldn't go through them all clearly. We will get back to you by the method in which you contacted us. So on the Facebook group or via Twitter, we will get back to you with some calm kind of answer over the next 12, 18 hours, something like that. So bear with us, please. But thank you for all the questions that you did ask. I think we'll do something very similar for the PGA Championship next month, which you're playing.
Yeah, well, very nicely. Black.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. 2019 Masters. Where should we start? We've done the course. We've done the kind of trends. I suppose we're into the picks, really, aren't we now? So just from a betting perspective, just to highlight to listeners, this is for more our listenership over here in the UK and Ireland, who make up about, I don't know, 65-70% of listeners. We have got some superb deals on offer from bookmakers this week. If you're fancying 10 places each way, which is clearly a play that will be popular to many, we have Coral going 10 places each way. We also have Paddy Power going 10 places each way. And we also have Betfair Sportsbook going 10 places each way. Last year, Coral went 10 and they were the only bookmaker. Yeah. That was the first bookmaker to ever do that. So they have now been matched by Betfair and Paddy Power. We do have new customer offers which are better than standard available at Golf Betting Systems. So get yourself along to the website. There are also other promotions available. Treble H Sport have got an interesting offer where if you open up a new account, they are doing a bet 10, get 30, plus an additional £10 golf free bet available. So that's a deal that's stronger than their standard account opening offer with Treble H Sport. All of the offers for the Masters are available on our website, Golf Betting System. I will put a link through to the website in the podcast description. I've also detailed many of them in this week's preview. Any other things of note, Paul, from a bookmaker perspective that I've missed so far?
Not really. I just to say that if you're getting 10 places each way in a field of 87 players, and those 87, realistically, you could chop that down to probably 60 blindfolded, then you get, you know, it's an incredible proposition from the bookies, it's got to be said. The prices with the guys who have gone 10 each way, naturally they're going to be different to some of the bookies who have been more rigid with their 5 or 6 places. But the Bet365 position, which is 8 each way and some decent prices as well, is probably a good halfway house. But do shop about, have a proper look at the different options you've got before placing your bets, because there's a multitude of different angles or ways you can play it this week. So, which is always nice to have from a punting perspective. Good to have the options available to us.
I think Bet365 are offering a decent bit of kind of position, aren't they? They're 8 places each way, 50 odds, and they've got some very attractive odds on offer. So that's another bookmaker to consider this week. But there aren't many bookmakers that actually haven't extended their offering this week, which is clearly very positive.
I think they've got to try and keep up the competition. So it's a good position to be in from a punting perspective, I think.
Rory McIlroy apparently has gone to 66-1 on Paddy Power 10 places each way. So if you're going to jump on board, I'd get on board very quickly. Either that or the odds facility I'm looking at has gone slightly wonky.
Yeah,
Tiger Woods is also 66s with Bet Paddy Power apparently. The favourite right now is John Rahm. The the top of the market has completely disappeared.
This is a no. Rory is not 66. I'm just on Paddy Power right now.
It's a mistake, but that is what is showing on this odds comparison website right now. Right, knowing that Rory McIlroy and Dustin Johnson head the market at 6/7-1 and 10-1, where are you two boys at in terms of the big two this week?
Personally, I would take Rory over DJ. Every day of the week for this. I think this is his best opportunity to win the Masters that he's had so far. Yeah, yeah. Personal Grand Slam. He's seen some fantastic form himself. Huge win at the Players, which will give him a real boost of confidence. Very consistent record coming into here, even though he's had some opportunities that he hasn't converted. And perhaps just the fact that he has overcome that with his Players win recently, combined with the fact that it's coming to a course, it's going to set up nicely for him as well, isn't it? You know, if it is going to be soft for the first few days, and it just seems like everything's aligning for him, in my view.
His record,
I agree.
His record here is phenomenal, isn't it? 2014 eighth. I mean, this is without the year when he, you know, collapsed when he was in the league. Eighth in 2014, fourth in 2015, 10th in 2016, 2017. He was seventh, and last year he was fifth. He actually went out in the final group with Patrick Reed, didn't he? And he was playing nothing like the golf he's playing right now last year. Yes, he won at Bay Hill. Yeah, you can say that. But when he won at Bay Hill, he could barely hit a green. It was all scrambling and short game and putting that won him that tournament.
Yeah.
His actual bread and butter, the driver and the long approaches, they were way out of kilter. Mm. This year, he's gone back to exactly the game that is Rory at his very best. Very long hitting, fairly accurate as well, and some fantastic consistency with the approach shots. And the putting's good enough. The scrambling's always been good enough with Rory. I think it's his best chance. So I've backed him 4 points to win this week. What was it, Paul? 13-2.
Oh, 15-2. So yeah, he got,
15-2.
Enhanced win only with Betfred earlier on today. So. Yeah,
when you look at these guys at the top of the market, I always try and pick a hole in them. And by God, I can pick holes in players. And I could not find a chink in the armour. Statistically, the way he's playing, anything at all. Even the way that he's won his majors in the past prompts me to back him this week. Because if you actually look at his wins, the four that he's had, they've all been off the back of some momentum. They've all been off a performance at the previous stroke play tournament where he's hit plenty of greens and his total driving numbers been very, very strong. And he's in exactly the same spot again. And as you said, that win at the Players can only do one, two things. It can only boost his confidence and it can only boost the caddy's confidence in terms of the fact that they were getting a lot of stick, the fact that A, they couldn't close and B, the relationship wasn't strong enough to actually get them over the finishing line. So okay, that was poo-pooed as well.
I get the feeling that one of these years, and it could well be this year, he'll get himself into such an incredibly strong position after three rounds that he can just saunter over the line, I think. And you know, the way it sets up this year, the way he's playing, I think that could well be the year. I know the price is skinny. We were talking about it last week when we did the preview. But it's probably representative of his true chance of winning.
Didn't you guys say you were praying for 10-1?
12s? No, 14s?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. I don't know.
I saw a couple of firms this morning go from 6s to 7s, and that was it.
Oh wow, God, how brilliant! What to do? Look, okay. My thoughts are, I think again, I agree with you guys. I think it's probably his best chance ever. He's got that maturity about his game. Blah 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 blah. The thing that's kind of worrying me on a price side of things is we're getting like Rory's at a price that kind of almost like Tiger Woods is at when Tiger Woods was in his pomp, and Tiger is the greatest golfer of our lifetime, and Rory's not, but the bookies have Rory at almost that level. And that's, and he's a clear favorite as well. I wonder how he's going to deal with that.
I thought that this would come up. I actually looked at some previous years earlier, and he has been over the last couple of years as short as 6-1 to win this.
So the expectation's been there. It's clearly been there.
This 7-1 isn't unheard of, and it's actually slightly longer than it has been in previous years when he probably hasn't been playing as well. But yes, I think it is the price, isn't it? You can't really argue either way. I think it is the genuine price.
Yeah.
You look at his record here compared to anyone via apart from Jordan Spieth, and those two are by far the best consistent players around Augusta in recent times.
It may well be a case that the only person to beat Rory this week, if he doesn't win, will be Rory himself. And if he can manage that, he can manage his own expectations, he can manage the fact that it's a personal Grand Slam, and he can just play his game, then I think he's going to be extremely hard to beat.
Do you think Rory would happily have any of the other majors in lieu of the Masters as his final one to win to complete a Grand Slam?
It's nice.
Like, if he had to win an Open to complete his Grand Slam, would it be a little bit easier because it's not the first major of the year? It's not, I don't know. Just wondering. Throwing it out there.
I don't know. I guess if you need to have kind of got your game into a kind of shape over the course of the year to be confident and comfortable that you're playing well enough to win a major, then potentially. But I think he's proven that with his win in a, you know, what it was, a truly world-class field at Sawgrass.
He's got his life in the scenario he wants, isn't he? Everything in the home life's great. He's got he's settled in Florida. He now focuses solely on the PGA Tour. He's got he's got a caddy he's comfortable with. He's just happy in his own skin, isn't he? And if you actually looked at it, if you take the four majors and you had a piece of paper and said, what are the most unlikely majors that Rory would win? I'd say that the US Open was by far the hardest one that he would ever win. He won that first because Congressional that year was as soft as Sid and it wasn't that difficult. Got the hardest major that he could win off his back as his first major. The PGA Championship is by far the easiest title that he could win, but I think Augusta's made for Rory. It's just that the gods have never decreed that that was the way it's going to be, but that doesn't mean he doesn't win this year, does it?
No, not at all.
The original question was McIlroy against Dustin Johnson, and it's interesting in the preview, McIlroy on the PGA Tour has won 6 times on bent grass greens. Justin Rose heads the field on 7. These are wins since 2008. And Dustin Johnson's down at 4 wins. I don't think that pure bent grass is DJ's best surface. I think he's far more comfortable with anything that's got Poana within it.
Yeah.
And we know that for a fact. So he'll be licking his lips for Beth Page in a few weeks' time.
Oh, yeah. That's
perfect. Right up his street. That, again, doesn't mean that Dustin Johnson doesn't win. And I know that he's going to be tipped up to... A lot of people will tip him up to clearly give a different view to Rory. And if you actually look at the way that DJ's playing, he's been positive strokes going tee to green across, I think it was the Valspar and the Players where he was fifth. I mean, for him to finish fifth at Sawgrass was a great result.
Mm.
But one thing I noticed, and trends and blah, 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 trends, you know, I always dig out a trend that normally brings me down when it comes to betting. But no one has won the World Golf Championship, the one that they used to play at Doral or the one they played in Mexico, and gone on to win the Masters. I mean, that's just, there's no reason for that, but it just hasn't happened so far. But yes, I did take a very close look at DJ, just to be contrary. And I had to go for Rory then, especially with that par four birdie or better statistic.
Yeah, it just ticks every box, doesn't it? You know, we went through it statistically on the last session, and you know, you can't fault him in that respect. And then the additional analysis that you've done just further cements it. It's got to be a massive opportunity for him. Just a shame about the price.
Shame about the price, yes. Big question. The big question for the podcast is often, Barry, have you backed Gary Woodland? Now, we know that you have, but that isn't the question I have in my mind. The big question I have in my mind is, have you or will you back the man that is Ricky Fowler? Because you and I are Ricky Fowler truthers. And I have backed him in my preview at 18-1 with Bet365, 8 places each way of 50 odds.
I'm so close to it. I really am.
Is your hand on your mobile? Just is it there? It's on that. It's trembling.
Putting in a loan application to really juice the bet. So I've noticed I can use one of my boosts on one of my accounts to get me 18 places. 18
places.
One.
God, 18 with?
Places. Yeah,
he might need them.
One fifth of the field. So 18-1, 10 places. So I feel like that's a no brainer.
I thought he was interesting last week. We almost had it off to a tee in last week's pod. He will start fast. He will see what's under the bonnet, and then he'll just slide away over the weekend. That's exactly what he did.
And I saw a cheeky little.
I know the field wasn't strong. I'm not suggesting it was, but he was sitting second in a PGA Tour event, tied second, wasn't he? And I don't think he was really trying that hard. I think the game's there.
No, I think you're right. And the cheeky little quote today saying, I'm happy with what I saw last week. I mean, it's almost like a race car driver just testing the car's initial acceleration. Boom. You know, nails it to the end of the first straight and goes, oh, this is grand. And he just cruises around for the rest of the tournament.
Yeah.
And 10 places. Okay, he's what? Top 12 in 4 of the last 5 years. Winner this year. Game's in good shape. He's got good. He has to have really good memories of last year. He almost won the thing, but for Patrick Reed being a lucky SOB and hitting that pin on 17, I think it would have been at least a playoff. So,
Ricky's going to be happy. Do you think a bit of wind helps him? Do you think keeping the handle on that scoring a little bit, lowering the target, helps Ricky?
He's great in the wind, isn't he, as well?
Yeah. I'm actually going to cash out every other one of my bets now and just put it all on Ricky after this. No, I think I have to add him. It's after last year. Yeah. I don't know if it's an emotional thing. Emotional protection bet again.
I'm exactly like you, Barry. Yeah. There's no way I couldn't write the tip. Now, Paul, you disassociate yourself from these kind of feelings that Barry and I have towards Ricky. But if you look at Rose, you look at Woods, you look at Rahm, you look at Thomas, you look at Spieth, and you look at Fowler, they're all in the same rough price range. What are your views across those six players? Rose, Woods, Rahm, Thomas, Spieth, Fowler.
Sadly, or positively, I guess, depending on which way you look at it, of those, I would go with Fowler. And I think...
This hasn't been pre-rehearsed.
No, absolutely. The Masters, the trends and the history is so solid with the Masters, and you know, a lot of what you see repeats itself from year to year. And again, when we went through the analysis of this, the two players that came out and ticked every single box were Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler. He absolutely has the game to win around here. I think, for me, the big stumbling block about backing him at 16, 18, whatever the number is that you may well be just playing for a place, because I suspect that, you know, I've got a very strong feeling that Rory will win this week.
Fair though, Paul, if I've got Ricky and Rory 4 or 5 shots clear coming down the stretch on Sunday,
I'll be enjoying
my evening. Yeah. I'll be having a couple of beverages and just enjoying the show, mate.
Yeah.
It's going to happen, but if that was to happen, we'd be WhatsApping each other like mad.
Mm.
But yes. You've got no interest in Rose or Woods or Rahm?
No.
I think Rahm's going to be popular this week. How do you think the weather affects Rahm?
We've always talked about Rahm, and we talked about his approach to playing different styles of or golf that's played in different conditions. And when it's tougher, he tends to struggle mentally, I think. When it's easier, he can just get into a rhythm and he can churn out birdie after birdie. And I don't think it's going to be like that. There's going to be variable conditions this week. He could get himself, you know, given the way that it looks like it's going to pan out, soft to begin with, easy on Saturday, he could be in a really strong position going into Sunday. I don't think that could be disputed. And then if you throw 25, 30 mile an hour winds into the equation, you know, 3-4 holes in, he's made a couple of bogeys, then we see Angry John. And Angry John around Augusta, it wouldn't be a pretty sight, I don't think.
Not in those
at some point, he will get his head around how to tackle all of those conditions and those situations from kind of his own mentality perspective, and he's got far and away enough talent to win a major championship. I just don't think he's quite there yet. And I think if we'd have seen 4 placid days of relatively soft conditions for Augusta National, then
that's a different. I think that's a different beast for him.
To me, that'd be a different question. And you know, in that case, I think at the price on offer, you'd be hard pressed to find a reason not to back him. But right now, it doesn't interest me, unfortunately.
I think that the way it's going to be quite packed after the first two rounds, and there's going to be players coming from way off the pace with a very low round on the Saturday when it's tranquil, when 65s and 66s are likely to be available to someone that shoots those kind of scores. It's going to be there to take. And then, of course, Sunday dawns, and it could be like it's going to be a whole different ball game.
It will create a fascinating dynamic for the tournament if the forecast does pan out the way it looks right now.
So you would take Fowler of those 6, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And,
I think Rose is struggling with his bread and butter. Woods, I'm not sure that he's got the brute power. I think the conditions will help Woods. I think he'll be a factor. I don't see him winning. I think he wins the Open Championship if he's going to win anything this year. I've got question marks over Rahm in the tougher conditions. I think Justin Thomas's game is struggling. His numbers are fantastic, but actually his numbers over recent outings, since he seemed to hurt his wrist hitting that tree at the Honda, his game seems to have gone downhill rapidly. And Jordan could play 36 great holes and have a 9-hole nightmare.
It was interesting to see a bit of positivity about Jordan's game last week. Does create another interesting dynamic to the week, because a Jordan Spieth who comes in and starts playing well, particularly if he starts well, everyone would be slapping their forehead saying, you know, should have seen it coming. He showed a little bit of form last week in Texas, and he's coming to a course that he just perennially does extremely well.
If I took the full field greens and regulation number for him last week, out of 144 players, he was 118th for greens hit.
Yeah.
That doesn't shout Masters winner to me.
It doesn't work around Augusta.
The week after?
No. But then, you know, we've seen in years gone by where he's struggled a bit from off the tee at Augusta, and he's just been pinging off the trees and bouncing back in the fairways and, you know, managing to get himself around one way or another. And when that putter's working, and one thing we have seen is that his putter is working far, far, far better than it has been for some other recent years where he's been approaching this.
If the conditions are a bit trickier this year with the wind, you know, the greens, everybody's greens and reg stats are going to be down.
Yeah.
You know, so that brings them closer to him, and it kind of increases the relevance of his short game and scrambling.
That's very, very true. Where are we in the mid-pack? Now, as I said in my preview, and we discussed this last week, and we, well, even in podcast 60, the winning price here can be very juicy. Anything from 28 to 66 is a price that regularly sees the winner here at the Masters. Where are you guys in this juicy mid-pack from Francesco in at 25s? Right through to the likes of Cantlay and Woodland at 66s and 80s, or 66s and 70s. Where are you guys staking your flags in the ground for this on that players in that range, the juicy range that we all like?
Well, the history.
You start, Paul. Well, you've already said Schauffele, yeah.
Well, he's the only other one I've that I've backed, and he that may well be where I finish for the week. It may just be Rory and Schauffele. I think if I'm backing someone to win this tournament, I want someone who's got the minerals to actually get the job done, who can go. You can make a case for a lot of people statistically in this tournament, and when push comes to shove on Sunday, are they actually going to be able to get over the line? And one thing we've seen with Xander is the boy knows how to win, and he knows how to win a big tournament, and he's got multiple major championships in his CV in the future. I cannot see a scenario where he doesn't win multiple majors. And he played 7 majors so far, I think, and he was second in the Open, wasn't he, last year? Nah, 6th at the US Open last year, 5th the year before, I think, as well. So he's got some really strong finishes already in his career. And then you add in the likes of the HSBC Champions that he won, the WGC, the Tour Championship. These are big events that he's performing at. 2nd at the Players last year as well, wasn't he? There's just lots and lots to like. And we've again touched on it a number of times. He's the kind of player who just knows how to peak for a big event. He focuses and he just gets himself into the frame of mind where he's going to come and perform on that particular week. I got 45 to 1 about him. I thought that was very fair in this field. It was too low a price in my view. I think he should be shorter than that. Given, well, is he still OWGR top 10 or there or thereabouts? He's not. He's certainly not the 10th player on the betting list. But he's, in theory, he's around the 10th best player in the world.
He's a great DraftKings player. I think he's a very good filler in terms of a DraftKings player as well. But yeah, 8 for bogey avoidance, 14th birdie or better. 25 par 4 birdie or better. He's also got the minerals, 19th going for the green and 20 in the top 30 for distance to apex. So he has the full package.
Yeah. I mean, the things that might put punters off. I mean, he was 50th here last year on debut.
Don't worry about that.
No, I don't see it
Williams
as a massive.
Was 51st on his only appearance before he won, so that's meaningless, isn't it?
Yeah, he was 16th after the first day. But bear in mind that this time last year, Xander was also using new equipment, so he was getting his head around that. So the fact that he made the cut and had a proper good look, got four rounds of competitive action under his belt, I think that's positive. People could look at his last couple of events. He went out at the group stage at the WGC. He missed the cut of the Players. He's a very immediate form, doesn't look that particularly that strong. But his last competitive round in that match play, he played Rafa Cabrera Bello. He was 5 under for that for the round, and Cabrera Bello beat him. So, you know, at the end of the day, he, you know, that's that the nature of that particular tournament. You can have a cracking round, and someone just has a very slightly better round, and you're out of the tournament. So, again, I'm not reading too much into it. I mean, for me, I think he loves these tougher tracks. You know, he likes a tough track. He can compete in that kind of environment with the players at the top of their game. I mean, the only reason statistically he didn't find his way through to the very final shortlist when we did that piece of analysis in the previous podcast is that his par 4 birdie or better performance for the season is 24th.
Yeah.
Now, you put that into context, he was 79th for the full season last year. So you can infer in that he's actually improved massively on, you know, year on year on that particular stand. So, I couldn't find any reason not to back him. And as I say, I think that may well be where I finish with my staking this week. Because I've looked further down the list and I can't find anyone I'm really interested in, which is unusual. I do like to take a couple of longer prices, but there's nothing there that's wet my whistle so far.
It's all right, Paul. I have those covered.
You and I are all over I'm on one and you're on both of the ones I'm thinking of.
Go on. I'm on the rest of the field. it's a safe way to win, guys. It's an interesting strategy. I don't think it pays off long term, but my God, the short term feeling of when you have the Masters champion backed on Sunday night, it's just wonderful. Yeah, okay, let's move. I've kind of skipped that mid-pack and let's kind of get out to that kind of, I suppose, the upper end of that pack.
There or thereabouts.
Yeah. You're in that absolute sweet spot where you could definitely make a case for them being shorter than they are, but they're at a nice price. So I'm on Patrick Cantlay, you are, Steve.
Yep.
He just ticked all those boxes, you know, distance, going for green, par 4 birdie or better. And he's got that kind of, let's say, stoic demeanor that, you know, doesn't kind of scream he's going to get ruffled by tricky conditions. He's a bit of... Yeah, so for all those reasons... yeah, he's on board this week.
I don't think he'll get paired with anyone, you know, hugely. His threesome at the start will be quite low key as well, I think. I don't think he's going to get Tiger Woods or any of this kind of rubbish going on.
No.
He'll just be able to get down to business.
I would also say that there's no way the Augusta Committee are going to pair any of the big names with him because he's got this, he's a very slow player. Annoyingly slow to watch with his constant feet shuffling. I don't think the Augusta Committee are going to pair any of the big names with him at the risk of their wrath, you know.
They might buddy him up with JB. Can you imagine that group?
Oh my God.
Dear.
Yeah.
And Kevin Nah, just to top it off.
I like Kevin Nah. I won't have it.
Okay, sorry.
He's working on it.
I'm in on Cantlay as well. I couldn't resist him. He's very juicy, I think, and I can see why, because he hasn't got that major top 10 or anything like that. But he's got the game to do that. And I put in my preview, I think he's had a 7th, a 6th, and a 7th at the last 3 WGC stroke play events, so he can play at the highest level. And I think the course suits him. And his scrambling's improved a hell of a lot, which you need to have this week, I think. So, yeah, I'm on Cantlay.
Yeah. I'm also on Woodland, as we went through at the start of the podcast, for mostly emotional reasons at this stage. But, look, he's got a game that should go very well at Augusta, even though his record is abysmal, really, for a guy of his talent. He's got 4 missed cuts out of 6 appearances. So I just hope this year he's been picking the brains of some other guys on tour on how to get him, you know, how to get around Augusta. Mm. I mean, he should be great for it. He also should, you know, and at that his DraftKings price is quite low as well. So, you know, he will probably make 1 or 2 of my teams, and hopefully that he finally shows up and plays well here.
That's a lot of big names we haven't mentioned, isn't it? I mean, we answered the Molinari question. There's Paul Casey, who I've managed to resist this year, guys.
Good job. Well done. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. There's Koepka, Jason Day. I mean, who knows what's going to turn up there. Any interest in Day or Matsuyama or Bubba Watson from you guys? None at all?
No. I think if Bubba had shown a little bit more, but he kind of... again, how much do you read into the match play? I suppose it should be one that you kind of just disregard, but he just sank without a trace there, didn't he?
But hang on, he did also say before the match play, I have no idea how he won this last year. I'm never going to win this again. I mean, it was like he was mentally ejecting from it before it even started. So, like, I don't know. Match play is such a messy one to read into. Yeah, I mean, and look, his record is pretty hit and miss here at Augusta if you look at it.
Oh, yeah,
you know, first, no consistency. 50th, first, 37th, 37th, miscut, fifth. That's, you know, up last year being the most recent one. So
none of those good performances included any kind of not noticeable wind either. It was all when it was fairly tranquil and calm.
Yeah. I don't think
the conditions play to him. I don't think the conditions play to Matsuyama either, to be fair. I think he's the greatest wind blower.
When we've seen Bubba do well, he's usually signposted it with a performance very recently where he's been absolutely smashing greens in regulation.
A brick on the back of the head job, yeah.
It's not
there, is it?
No, you can take that stat and you can work with it going forwards, but it's not there. And if he does win, then it will be kind of flying in the face of how he tends to operate as a golfer.
The other one, the number I got to be wary of time. Just running through past winners, Watson, previous outing, strokes gained tee to green 7th. Spieth, strokes gained tee to green 1st. Danny Willett, strokes gained tee to green 12th and 12th on his two outings before he won this. Strokes gained tee to green, Garcia, 4th and 9th. Reed, 13th and 2nd. 2nd and 13th. You know, there's no one there with a high strokes gained tee to green number on their previous outing that's gone on and won this recently. You could even go back to Bubba Watson when he won it the first time round. I think he was something silly like strokes gained tee to green 2nd in the outing before he won it. And just following that on and just searching for players over the Florida stretch who had that level of consistency from tee to green, there weren't many. One of them was John Rahm. One of them was Dustin Johnson. But I've gone down the route of Ricky Fowler. Whether that's emotional or I don't know. I genuinely think that Rahm could struggle in the conditions. And DJ, well, he could win it by 12 shots, couldn't he? But it's not for me. The one that jumped out at me, who I was on at the Players, and he almost won for me. He didn't actually eject like most of my... guys do, like Johnny Vegas did this week. He's gone into my absolute bucket of never back again after last night. It's Tommy Fleetwood. And if you actually look at Tommy's numbers, I don't think that Augusta's that bad a fit for him, especially if it's going to be a bit iffy on the weather. Yeah. Top 20 bogey avoidance. Par 4 or better, yes, 61st. But actually, if you look at his number from last year, he was 7th on the par 4s. 13th going for the green, 49th distance to apex. He was in the top 6 going into the final round last year. He's always got a low round in him. So he could be the sort that on that Saturday fires in that 65, 66 and just hurdles up the leaderboard. I just thought in that mid-range where if you're looking for players that have been playing some superb stuff from tee to green across the Florida stretch on some very tough golf courses... I thought Fleetwood was a reasonable price at 30-1.
Yeah.
Second for tee to green he was at Bay Hill, where he finished 3rd. And he was also 5th for strokes gained tee to green at the Players, where he finished in the end 5th behind McIlroy. And, you know, he's at that 28-30-1 price point where potentially winners are lurking. So, rather than... picking Matt Kuchar, who I don't think's got the raw materials to win here, even though I'm sure he will place. I thought, well, I'd go for Fleetwood on that basis, that he actually has got the game that could theoretically win it. So that's the way I plump with it. I plump for Tommy. I think Kuchar is going to go really well. I just can't see a reason that he won't do. And on DraftKings, I reckon that Kuchar is going to be the most owned player of the week.
Yeah, he's low enough and he's decent enough, Nick. He's been steadily backed in, hasn't he, all day to day, and I suspect that will carry on. He will be put up by a number of the tipsters online or in the papers, I'm sure. So yes, he's going to be a prohibitively short price, I guess, given his, given his relative stature in world golf. But perhaps this new ruthless streak we're seeing about Kuchar and other walks of his life will be something that gets him over the line in the major.
I think a positive for Fleetwood is that in the main, when he does get in contention in a big tournament, and he's been in contention in many big tournaments, he doesn't disappear completely. He doesn't shoot four over on a soft golf course that he should be absolutely tearing apart like Johnny Vegas did last night. He actually hangs around. So I saw that as a plus point with Fleetwood. So, McIlroy for me, Fowler, Fleetwood and Patrick Cantlay. Those are my four that I've backed.
Steve, we'll be singing off a very similar hymn sheet come Sunday evening and hopefully be toasting champagne across WhatsApp video calls or something like that. I'm pretty much convinced on adding Ricky. Yeah, for better or for worse.
I don't think you'd forgive yourself, Barry, if you didn't.
Well, if you can boost him up to 20-1 with 10 places each way, I think that's a good bet. Or did you say 18s?
Was it 18? I had three boosts saved up actually. So I think I'm just gonna. I don't think you can use big. Yeah, I'll just add them one at a time. I'm thinking of going big on him. Even if he gets a top 10, I'll make a profit out of it. So that's the logic behind it. Yeah. Also trying to, win enough money to get some new golf sticks for the season, so.
But are we of the opinion, if there will be listeners out there before we, before we disappear and go and do our things, who will be shouting, please mention someone at a big price who you think's got a big chance to at least place.
Paul's already
said he's struggling to find players at big prices that he likes.
Over 100-1.
Yeah, why not? Is there anyone out there? There's one player I thought, Paul, that you might be interested in that I thought were looking at his numbers and just the way that he plays. I know he's a debutant, but I just thought that 150-1 about someone like Matt Wallace wasn't the worst price in the world.
No, and he's been out there practicing with Faldo. He's had a good look at the course. I think he's got the right kind of mentality. I think unless you're that truly elite player, I think you need to have some practical experience of not just the course, but the event itself and, all the nuances that come with it and the whole package, the whole week that's there, and I wish him well, and I really do hope that he gets a good 4 days under his belt. But I can't be backing him.
I'm just looking at the top debutant market because there's so many debutants this year. I mean, he is favourite.
Yeah.
Oh, listen, he's level with Pepperell.
Yeah. There's, again, Eddie, he's starting to find his feet in some of these bigger events, isn't he? He's the kind of player who could sneak into a place.
Is Eddie long enough, though?
Well, this is the challenge, isn't it?
And it's a big course for him.
And he said on the No Laying Up podcast the other week that he can't draw his driver. He has to go Fleetwood to get any kind of shape on his driver, which I just instantly thought, 13, he's going to struggle.
Yeah. Big trouble. The fifth being lengthened as well. You need a bit of a. I don't know. That's not a great recipe for me. There's a couple there that you can get at 125-1. Right. We spoke about him earlier. Charles Howell, tons of experience, playing well, and there's a great chance of getting him. Where can you get him? 125, 8 places. Sure, you could somehow sneak him 10 places somewhere. He's 100-1, 10 places, if you want to go that way.
Yeah.
Then, and I also, Haotong Li, get him 125-1 8 places or 100-1 10 places. I think he's got a very good game.
Yeah.
And
he's got that Dubai Desert Classic link, hasn't he, going?
Yes.
And I could see him a top 10 without shocking me in the slightest. Winning now is a bit of a stretch, but if you just want a bit
of
a...
Did he have a year here where he got into kind of some kind of contention at some point?
He only played... He only played last year, 32nd.
Second, but yeah, it's interesting.
It's not bad for a debut.
No, very good around here for a debut.
And if Lucas Bjerregaard plays anything like the way he played at the match play, he has got a good game. It's got a good fit for Augusta National. He can hit the ball a long way. And he's playing with a lot of confidence in the match play. But again, it's his first look. And I don't know, with such an elite field, I think the number of players that you'll be able to pick up who are going to be in that kind of 100-1 bracket or longer, who actually manage to sneak into the top 8 or the top 10 or whatever each way terms you're taking, I think you'll do extremely well to find that one or two players
On Houghton, he started with a 69 last year, fourth in the field. So he was tied fourth after round one.
Mm.
And then just 76, 72, 72.
Could be a cheeky first round leader bet there.
Yeah. He's been there or thereabouts, hasn't he, Lee?
He's playing some good stuff, yeah.
I'd probably take him over someone like Rafa Cabrera Barrow, who we know doesn't have the minerals half the time when push comes to shove. Yeah, interesting. I think that's about it then, chaps. Anything you want to add, Paul, before we disappear?
No, only that we'll do our DraftKings show tomorrow. So that'll be another interesting... That'll be a slightly different look at this because you can start to bring some of these other players in who you don't expect to actually win the tournament but who are going to represent some good value in that particular format of the game. And then the alternatives and first round leader bets, which will be out either late Tuesday or early Wednesday. I always like that. There's some interesting angles to play with that. Make the cut accumulator is always an interesting one to play.
First round leader always has a few little sweet spots.
It does.
A couple of group numbers that more often than not actually produce something.
Yeah, and the forecast right now looks pretty flat for the entire day. So it will be interesting to see.
It does look very, very cold early on. So that might be something to build into.
Yeah, there's different factors. And it looks relatively breezy all day, but relatively flat. But yeah, as you say, there's the sweet spot in the morning. There's a sweet spot in the afternoon in terms of tea times historically. So it'll be fascinating to see where everyone sits once the tea times
come. And it isn't always elite players either.
No.
I think one thing before we go as well, Bet365, our majors competition, that's clearly going to close with the first tee off on Thursday. So we'll put a link through to the rules around how you can enter on the majors competition. And we've got a load of DraftKings activity this week as well. Paul's set up loads of different tournaments. So again, there's links through to our DraftKings groups for you guys out there that do like some fantasy action. So we've got DraftKings leagues and we've also got the majors competition. Four different players for the four majors this year. It's 250 prize pot, isn't it, cash?
Yeah, 150, 75 and 25 to the third placed player.
Barry, thank you very, very much for your time this afternoon.
Cheers, guys.
It's been much appreciated as ever.
Yeah, best of luck, chaps.
Are you going to appear next week, Barry, for your favourite RBC Heritage?
Are you
going to dig your head in the sand and not get involved with that one?
We're going to spend the first half of that show having a bit of a Ricky Fowler love-in after and talk about how great he looked in a green jacket.
You'll be doing that. Paul will be waxing lyrically about Jim Furyk and how the course suits him down to the ground.
Yeah.
And we'll all be saying how we need to be on Siwoo Kim and he'll miss the cut.
Yeah, even if he's 500-1, yeah.
That's it. We've cracked next week's podcast before we've even got there.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting indeed. Yeah, Furyk will be annoyed he missed out this week by just, what, one spot, I think it was.
Well, it was one result at the World Match Play, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was close.
Whoops. Yeah. Oh, anyway, on to more important things. I'm sure everybody has a massive week of Masters TV planned and watching old shows. And I know that's where I'm going to be. So, top tip for the week is make sure your drinks and your snacks are easily within reach of the couch so you don't have to move very much.
I've never really organised it yet where I can be somewhere without the wife and child.
A hotel.
Yeah, I know. Maybe I should do that. And then just get a nice curry delivered in with a few beverages. I can see that, yeah. Right, thank you, Barry. Thank you, Paul. We've got another busy day tomorrow. The podcast, the Fantasy or the DraftKings podcast will be out tomorrow with Paul. Right, thank you for listening. And please enjoy your 2019 Masters. Goodbye. Thank you.